Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the custard on my crumble, it's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Mate, these get better every week.
Thank you very much.
I love that.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave, my crumble.
Custard, you're the crumble, silly man.
Of course. Well, I've deconstructed it.
You have deconstructed it like they do on all of these fancy programs. It's a deconstructed apple crumble. And in many ways, we've had worse reviews than that, haven't we?
We have had much worse. Now, today, as you can probably guess, our guest today is a cook. He's a TV presenter and an author, no less. He's been one of the best loves and most recognisable faces on British TV and has been for the last two decades. He makes up exactly 50% of the Hairy Bikers, and he joined us today. It is, of course, the brilliant Si King. Hello, mate. How are you?
Hello, guys. Hello. Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good, very good. And how are you, lovely gentlemen?
We are very, very good indeed, and the better for your company, Mr. King. It is lovely to see you once again. Listen, welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you on. Can we just kick off by sending our very best wishes to Dave for a speedy recovery from his treatment? I know that you're currently in the promo stages of the new book, et cetera, and you're doing it solo. So if Dave is listening to this at any point, get yourself right and back on the bike, and we look forward to seeing you both back together soon where you rightly belong.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, he's very focused on his on the treatment at the minute, and he's doing as well as can be expected. And, and you know what Dave's like, he's a tough old boot,
isn't he?
So he'll be he's rock hard. He's from Barrow, isn't he?
They breed them different up there, don't they?
No, they definitely do. It's pies, I think. Potato and mince and potato pies. Well, thank you, guys. I'll definitely pass that on.
No, absolutely. So, you know, at the risk of stating the obvious, not the plans that you necessarily had in place for 2022, but I guess with these things, you know, you're a partnership, you've worked together so long, you know how each other think, you just adapt, don't you? And I guess when one has to take up a little bit more of the slack, you do that and vice versa, and you work around each other.
And Dave's done exactly the same for me. So you know, it's just and you know, we're family. You know, the two families. Mm. It's a bit of a family affair. All of that. So it's all good. It's all good. So thank you.
So Si, tell us how you guys, you know, found your groove back in what 95? What was it?
90. Well, yeah, it was actually. Yeah, good grief. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Do you know what's even more scary about that, though, which I find now, is the fact that 1995 to me still feels like not that long ago. And it's when you then work out that people who were actual grown humans were born in 1995, and you go, how is that even possible?
Lads, do you know when you go online and you've got to like put your date of birth in?
Yeah.
You know, and you get that click button. You're going down the thing, and shit. This is like 1966.
It's a long way down, isn't it?
It is, man. It's a lot. It goes on for bloody ever. Yeah. And I'm thinking, I need a drink at the end of it. it's like what is going on?
You've had to descend the depths of the world to find your birthday.
Yeah, to find me, but yeah, to year of birth. And I just kind of, I often think that, like, you know, those search engines, you know, and all of those kind of metadata and all that. So I thought, I just think they're taking the piss. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah. That's enough now. How are you?
Well, you'd think they'd, because they know everything about us, you'd think it would automatically put it in the right place, wouldn't it? No, you've got to scroll all the way down.
No, all the way, you know, but just they just do it to torture you, just to go, yes, that's how old you actually are, you grumpy Geordie bastard. It's funny because, you know, when times like this, you know, life goes on, doesn't it, and it changes and all of that. And you know, Dave and I have been quite reflective over the past few months, and it's been really interesting in the sense that, look, there has to be we're just naturally enthusiastic men.
Yeah.
And we're normal blokes that's had the privilege to be put in extraordinary circumstances. Mm. Around stuff that we absolutely love and are enthused about, i.e. motorcycles, the road, food and music. You know, that's what we've done. And that was our life blood and life passion anyway.
Yeah.
So to have the opportunity to then go, okay, well, let's make some programs about this. And you know, the BBC has its ups and has its downs, but God love them. They've kind of stuck with us, you know, because we have done some mad shit.
Good lad.
And it's just like, yeah, go on, lads, crack on. You know, it's great. So look, and I think as well, the families help, and certainly the Northeast helped for me to keep me feet firmly on the ground, you know. And I've got very, very close friends that I've had for very many years in the go, Kingy, don't you start to be a wanker now. Do you know what I mean? You're like, I wasn't thinking about, am I? Yeah. Go get a running away with you. You know, there's a mate of mine called Nikki, and Nick's my she's like a sister to me. We've known each other for years.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, she goes, yeah, when you lose weight, your ego always goes a bit further up the scale. She goes, I'm bloody dreading it, me. I'm dreading it. And I was like, do I? Really? So, and I know I do. So it's kind of, and I think it's just that those conversations that you have with great people that are full of integrity and full of life's knowledge is great. And I think that's definitely what, and anyway, Dave, you know as well that I'm not, you know, I'm not clever enough to be anybody else.
Well, listen, that makes three of us.
Exactly, lad.
But I think it's one of those things where once you get to the point where you don't enjoy this fabulous lifestyle that you have been somehow afforded, it's time to just walk away, you know. And as you say, you can see the enjoyment after all of these years and all of these road trips and stuff like that. You can see that you still enjoy it, because you wouldn't be able to fake that or mask it.
Well, it's bloody hard work, and you wouldn't be able to do it unless you were in love with it. And I mean, all of us, we've all been through those ridiculous hours in our careers, haven't we? You know, it's just what it dictates on some occasions. But you know, you get a little bit older, and you get a little bit wiser, and you're able to find out who's taking the piss and who isn't. Work with the people that isn't. See, it's just like, it's simple enough, isn't it?
The radar gets much more sensitive, doesn't it?
It does.
And it's a little bit sharper. So listen, Si, on top of the numerous telly series, there's a small matter of the books. Myself and Jason, we're a big fan of a meat feast or a one pot wonder or an Asian experience or a Mediterranean adventure. But these days, I'll be honest, as we're getting a bit, you know, more health conscious, we're just interested in simple, healthy food, that kind of stuff, you know, food that's simple and healthy. So we're wondering if you had anything in your ample arsenal of culinary literature which would cater for our exact needs.
Well, yes, we have, which is exactly what the book's called, Dave, and I loved what you did there,
It's a lovely-looking book, though, Si. I mean, not that they're not normally, but it's a lovely-looking book. I've sort of thumbed through it. I've actually done proper research on this. I've been through recipes and whatever. The one that caught my eye straight off the bat, just because it's what I like, cod and ham croquettes.
Yes.
Oh, you're great. Fighter.
I love a croquette.
Yeah. I love a croquette, and you know what else? You know what else is great? I think this might be up Jason's street here. Is we've got meatballs with chips up curry sauce.
Oh, you're joking.
No.
Oh, that's a thing of beauty, I think.
Yeah, well, I thought you'd be into that, bro. Yeah. I definitely did. So I think that just so you do know, per portion, it's 361 calories.
Oh, well, that's slimming food, I think.
That's see?
Yes,
and look, that's the whole approach to the books. We're just, you know, we can strip the calories out because we've got some great nutritionists that work with us, and we can strip the calories out, but we absolutely will not compromise on flavor.
Yeah.
So it's constant tweaking. And what's been nice about researching this book and doing this book, because every time you get a title for a book, it creates its own narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
And that narrative is kind of brings a fresh. After quite a lot of books that we've the cookbooks that we've written, it always brings a fresh perspective. So it's kind of quite nice to do, you know. And this was Dave's actually. This Dave's idea.
Was it?
Because he's, you know, he's from Barra, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? And the Geordie version was the shawarma kebab. So we that's in there as well, and it's just, again, it's just, look, it's just great tasting food that's not gonna, that's, you know, that it's not gonna break your calorie bank, you know. So
have you got anything going on which is like a saveloy dip with a bit of peas pudding kicking off? Have you got out like that?
Sadly, but thank you, because that I'm writing that down.
There we go.
Now listen, Si, I'm gonna switch tack slightly and ask you what I suspect is an impossible question. When you think of the many series you've done over the years with Dave, whether it's Go North or Route 66 or the Mississippi or motorcycling through South Korea, I remember on the Asian Adventure, is there a favorite trip or even a favorite moment, or is that impossible to ask?
It's pretty impossible question to ask, because, you know, as I was saying before, Dave, that we're all kind of we're normally massively enthusiastic people. So when we have the privilege of being, you know, riding a motorcycle across the Namibian desert and seeing desert elephants and giraffes and kudu, and you know, that was amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, you wouldn't do a food program there because there's nobody there. But anyway, it's kind of difficult that. And the ones that we were trying to find was the Himba tribe, and we just worked out that they were nomadic. So
good job you got your bikes.
Exactly. Where are they now? Oh, up near the Angolan border. Oh, God, what they're doing? Herd and paddle. What's that? That's what they do. And we were like, right. So
that was
amazing. I mean, that was amazing. But then, like, you know, going across the Patagonian plains in Argentina was just amazing. And then those little cultural nuances that you'd hear on the radio, like, men and women of Argentina, and then they'd go, and children, you're not eating enough beef. And you'd go, what, is this a government announcement? And they go, yeah, it happens 4 times a week. You know, and you go, well, how much meat do you need to eat? Yeah. She went, well, clearly more than we are. So there was all of that sort of stuff going on, which was amazing. And then in India on Royal Enfield Bullets, you know, discovering 10,000 years of alchemy with spice and the nuances of where of kind of what, you know, the colonial past that we had there and just that. That and how India has kind of changed, and is it's so hard. If I had to pick one for the cuisine, definitely India. But then Thailand was amazing, and South Korea was amazing. You know, it's an impossible question. But
then I suppose there's other personal ones, isn't it? Like when on Go North, you know, and when you're there back in your homeland, and I could see actually there was certain moments on that which were different level, deeply, deeply personal and deeply, deeply special, because it was, you know, you were there overlooking the beach that you used to run around on as a kid, you know, and all of these beautiful memories coming flooding back.
And that's it, isn't it? That's what good telly is about. It's about giving something that you, it's about sharing those intimacies. I mean, you know, not everything is for TV, but those sort of things are just, I think that's just important, you know, and you have a responsibility, I always think, if you have a profile, to actually give a little bit of yourself, just so people understand who you are and where you're from and what's formed you as a human being. And I think that's because we have a really, I always think that particularly in the West, well, and particularly in the UK, we have a very unhealthy relationship with celebrities. And with the celebrity culture of it, perpetuated mostly by celebrity, and that's always felt very uncomfortable for Dave and I. So we want to give our personal take on things, because we think that side of things is complete and utter nonsense. You know, everybody goes to the bog at the same time in the morning, pretty much, give a half an hour here or there. Yeah. You know, and that this kind of, you know, mystique about it all, well, there isn't any. It's just people doing what they do. You know.
So, Si, in terms of the bikes, because that's, you know, that's in both your DNA. When did that start? I mean, as kids?
Well, yeah, no, as kids. It started with Dave, with his dad, because his dad was like in those days in the 50s, a working class man couldn't afford a car. You were always on a motorcycle, and all my heritage was that as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my dad, after he came, he had a sabbatical because my father was in the Second World War in the Arctic convoys. So when he came on shore leave, he rode a motorcycle. He was a dispatch rider for the Royal Navy, and then he'd go back on. Then he'd go back on the Arctic convoys. So, and then my Auntie Hilda and Uncle George, they were formative in because they lived on. So we have a place called the Team Valley. You'll know it, Jason. And the Team Valley is there's loads of workers there. You know, it was a big industrial area.
Yeah.
We had people like Delarue's and, you know, large engineering firms, all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff, most of which are still there. But they lived in Lamesley, and which is just up the road. And there was a notorious crossroads. And my Auntie Hilda always used to have sheets ripped up for bandages.
Never.
Because the lads would come out and they'd just crash. And then all of the detritus that was left on the road ended up in my Uncle George's backyard. And mostly kind of bits of motorcycles and scooters. So we'd fix them up waiting for, because, you know, insurance companies then, you know, you had to write letters. There was no email. Yeah. So it took ages. Yeah. So my Uncle George would go, you should have a go on that, still works. So I'd be up and down the back lane on all these kind of wobbly-wheeled kind of Vespas.
Fantastic.
And BICA Bantams and all that sort of stuff. And then it just kind of, I don't know, it just created its own momentum. And I got completely fascinated by two wheels and that motorcycle engine, which was completely different to the engineering of a motor car.
Yeah.
And there was another element to riding a motorcycle that was just wonderful, in the sense that you were part of the journey. You went, you know, it wasn't about getting from A to B. It was actually that bit in the middle just became more and more romantic as I went through my teens.
Yeah.
And I rode motorcycles and I used to ride with some of the lads and it was just, it was all of that. It just completely captivated my imagination. Yeah. And I remember the first time I stripped down a Cush drive on a CB 750 F1, and I thought, why is it there? And then I put it all back and rode it up the street, and I went, oh, yeah, that's why it's there. And then I took it private and put it back, and I was like, okay, yeah, that's there for a reason.
There's something really cool about being on a bike, because you're part of the air, aren't you? You know, you can feel everything.
And your senses are heightened because you're looking out for your road craft is just a lot better.
Yeah, it's sharper, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's sharper. Yeah, because most of the time you're looking into junctions, anticipating what people are going to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, fortunately, touch wood, I've been relatively lucky like that. But I always think that I still haven't changed my opinion, particularly now there's so many cars on the road, that everybody should have a motorcycle license before they even set foot anywhere near a car.
Yeah.
Because your road craft is way better. So yeah, I motorcycles for me, as you say, Jason, as part of my DNA, I absolutely, absolutely love them. As does Dave, you know, he had the same journey, really.
Does that work to the detriment of your love of the motor car? And by that I mean, do you find yourself kind of one or the other, in so much as bikes are your thing and that's what kind of gets your juices going, but is a car for you just a functional piece of machinery?
No, it isn't. Dave's a proper petrol. I mean, he loves his cars. I mean, he absolutely loves them. And he'll keep going. So I went through this stage. I like cars. I genuinely do. But I like the form of them. So my car career started with a 1969 left-hand drive VW Beetle 1302.
Two,
flat screen. And then I progressed to a Sumatra Green 1303S, which had a curvy screen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And then I did all these up. And then I had a Morris Traveller, which I absolutely loved. I adored that car, and I'd still have one today. I love classic cars. I've always wanted, and I've never really had anywhere to put it. I've always had a wanton lust for an original Citroën DS Palace.
Oh, yes.
Because they are just the most beautiful aesthetic things I've ever seen. They're works of art on wheels. So that kind of reintroduced my enthusiasm for cars. So Dave was driving anyway, cut to 10, 15 years later, 20 years later. Dave's riding around in really nice vehicles, and I've got a 1978 VW camper van and a Land Rover Defender and two custom stoppers that you needed an osteopath after 150 miles. Yeah. So he goes, Kingy, can you just get a decent car? I goes, I've got a decent car, I've got my Land Rover Defender. And he's going, it's a tractor.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I know, but I've pimped it a bit. You know, I've done stuff. And he went, yeah. It's a now you look like a rural drug dealer.
So how have you pimped it?
So I put like so I de-chipped the engine a little bit, which is mad because I don't know why Land Rover just don't do it like full stop, because it just like the fuel consumption went up, it was faster, and I just thought, oh, I put an automatic gearbox in it because I'm a lazy bastard. and I pushed the seats back a bit in the back, and then I put you know, the Maasai Safari glass in the back, and it was a two-tone kind of vibe, and I had those big BFG things, Goodrich things, put on. I've never changed the tire. What is for 10 years? I've never changed the tires. Well, just because they never wear out. And you know, I did a little tweaks here and there with the styling of the interior, but fundamentally, it's still a Land Rover, and I absolutely
love it.
And so I had me camper van and I had me Land Rover for years and years and years. And then I went, I think I need a proper car. Like, because I was driving down to Italy a lot to see my sister who lives in Tuscany. And I was thinking, this Land Rover thing's killing me, man. I don't know why. It's just killing it. Anyway, so I rang. This is how I buy cars. So I rang Audi up because I'd had an Audi and I couldn't think of anyone else that I wanted. And I rang them up and I said, right, you've got 25 minutes. I need a car and I need it to do this. And they went, right, okay. So, and I said, because if you don't do it in 25 minutes, I'll lose interest and I'll wander off and buy another motorcycle.
Yeah.
But they went, right. So anyway, and it was Listers in Coventry, which is miles away from where I live. And they rang us back and went, right, we've got your car. And I went, oh, what is it? And they went, oh, it's a Q8. And I went, right. Okay, and I had no idea what this Q8 was. And my girlfriend at the time rang and said, do you know what you've bought? And I went,
it's a house.
Not really, no. Anyway, I rocks up at this place and went, oh, it's quite big, isn't it? And the salesman went, what do you mean? You didn't know what you were buying? And I said, well, I had an idea, but not like, you know, I didn't know. And I went, shit, where's the dashboard? And they went, well, it's virtual. And I went, it is me. I'm a Luddite. What is anyway? So I got this Audi Q8, and I loved it. I love it. I just think it's the most amazing thing. And I'm kind of quite pleased with Audi at the minute because it just all works.
Yeah.
Me as a complete technophobe and moron can actually just push stuff and I go, oh,
look at that.
Look at that. Well, it is. It takes us 20 minutes to get off the drive because it's like flying a jet aircraft.
Yeah.
It's just, but I kind of, and anyway, the sound system's epic.
And have you done some transcontinental motoring in this yet? Have you been down to Tuscany yet?
Yeah, I have. Well, this was it. So how about this one? So I drove from Newcastle down to Portsmouth, got the ferry, got off at San Malo, stayed in France, went through the Fréjus tunnel, picked my sister up in Florence, then went on another 9 hours to Puglia, had the holiday, came back, dropped my sister off, went back through the Fréjus tunnel, stayed in France, got a bit pitched in Condrieu, and then got the ferry back and drove it home.
Mate, that's a proper trip, isn't it?
Oh, no, it was great, man. And it's just, you just like, it drives itself. Yeah. And it literally drives itself. And I was thinking, what is that thing? Why? It's a bit kind of, you know, German in the sense that please put your indicator on if you're changing the lanes. You know, yeah, it's all of that, and if you drift off, the seat wobbles and it wakes you up. And you're like, what is this? It's like a horror movie. What was that movie that was Christine? It was like, you know, it was like driving Christine's truck. It was just like, what is going on here?
And have you got the big dirty V8 in it?
Yeah, it's the S.
It's a good bit of kit, isn't it?
It's an amazing bit of kit. It's the fastest thing I've ever done. And the first 3 weeks I had it, I got 6 points on my license. It's just like, oh shit, this is going to kill me.
Too fast and too comfy, I bet.
Because the technology is you're doing like 95 miles an hour, and it feels like you're doing 40.
Yeah.
So it's kind of you've got to keep a lid on it, really, and that's part of the problem, because I'm a motorcyclist, so inevitably my right foot's pretty heavy, and but it's motorcycle acceleration in a car, which I've never had before.
Have you driven anything electric?
No, and I should, because I'm a massive advocate of the environment, but I just seem to be sitting on a V8 4 litre.
Do you know what, Si, it doesn't make you a bad person, that mind, because I like trees and stuff. But I like my V8s as well.
Thanks, mate. I'm glad there's some solidarity, because I do get in it sometimes and feel really guilty. And my kids tut at me. I've given tut, man. Give over.
But do you know what? In the bike world especially, that's where electric is really going to come in, possibly even quicker, I think, than in the four-wheeled world, because it's presumably a lot easier because of the power-to-weight issue.
We did, and actually they were really innovative machines. Actually, we did a series that's kind of out next year on two electric motorcycles called Energicas, and they were from Modena in Italy.
Yeah,
and beautifully looking motorcycles. But it was like riding a really really fast. It was like a milk float, because it didn't make any sound.
Yeah.
And they were incredibly able. They handled well. They were incredibly quick. The center of gravity was really low. Yeah. You could smash them into bends really, really. There was, you know, they were well behaved motorcycles.
I feel there's a big butt coming.
Well, there is, in the sense that the motorcycles are fantastic, but the infrastructure to actually charge the feckin' things isn't here. It's not here. So when you're touring, It was difficult, you know, because you'll get 163 miles out of them, which is not bad for an electric motorcycle.
Yeah.
But you need, you know, when you're on filming schedules, as you know, they're pretty tight. So, you know, if you need to plug it in, you need to plug it in.
Yeah.
And the infrastructure just wasn't there.
This is a problem that I don't know whether you saw it, but obviously there's been the series with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman, and they obviously did Long Way Round, and they did Long Way Down, and then they did the third part of the series, and they did Long Way Up, and they went from Buenos Aires, I think, all the way up to Los Angeles was the journey.
Yeah.
And they had these incredible electric motorcycles, and even the crew vehicles were electric, and they had all this stuff, you know, donated to them. But the one issue that they have was the fact that the infrastructure wasn't there. The kit was great, but you know, if you're in the middle of the middle of bloody Chile, or in the middle of, you know, whatever, Bolivia, you can't find anywhere to charge it.
Well, that's it, and that's a. It's actually that was the issue, because that you. I remember one day we were filming on the Tweed actually, and we had about 3 miles. Of charge left in these bikes, and literally we pulled in, we stopped in front of camera exactly where we one go at it.
Yeah.
There was a big drone shot going on. There was three cameras on it, and the bikes just went there. And we were like, honestly, lads, it was sixpence, half a crown, because we were like, oh, and there was no way to. So, and then we had to put the bikes in the back of the van to actually, which was petrol or diesel, and to go and to take it to a charging point 35 miles away. Nonsense. It's okay. Big corporations kind of going, you know, well, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do this. Well, okay, well, that's fine. You know, we're perfectly happy to do that. But you have to give us the infrastructure for the tools that you're asking us to buy to make it work.
Yeah.
So It's actually, that's interesting. The long way up is a trip that I've wanted to do since Dave and I were in Argentina, because I want to go from Prudhoe Bay all the way down to Tierra del Fuego. I will do that, whether I do it privately or personally. But I definitely want that, that is definitely on. I'm not going to rest until I do
that's
that.
That's a proper trip.
Huh? I'd quite like to do that very much, actually.
So, Si, we always think that music and motoring, they go hand in hand.
Indeed.
So, you know, if you bear in mind, you've done some epic trips, but your fantasy drive or ride that you've not done, where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And more importantly, what are you in or on?
I'm probably on an old Matisse. I, with all my saddlebags and it properly fully loaded, because at least you can get your hands in them when it stops. I would be listening to probably Led Zeppelin's Graffiti.
Brilliant.
And I'd be on that route from Prudhoe Bay to Tierra del Fuego. That would be it. And then as you go through, I'd just kind of move into Motown, and because I don't know whether you guys know, but I have a big funk band. I've got a brass section and two singers. It's a big deal for me at the minute. So. The King Kush band takes over a massive amount of my time because they're all great players. So, as you drive through, you get the smell of the music in the air. So you just kind of change what you were doing. And then you'd stop at great barbecue places. You'd stop at great roadside.
This is what I was going to ask you. I was going to say, in terms of when you get there, what's then the fantasy meal to top off that journey? What is it? What are you eating? What are you drinking?
I tell you what I'm drinking. There's some great wines from Cordoba as you come through the north of Argentina.
Okay.
And as you go through, and actually I've put a load of wine in my both red and white in my gear, and I'm sitting on a beach looking out at the Tierra del Fuego. And I've on a barbecue, and I'm cooking some fish that I've just caught, because the fish there is off the scale good. It's off the scale good. Dave and I went fishing off the Peninsula Valdez, and it was just, man. So that's it. Dead simple for me. Nothing far out. Just great food, open fires, barbecues, fish. Happy days.
Jason, on that note, matey, I think you need to take us out.
Oh, well, unfortunately, yes, we've got to wrap this up. So that's it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car or your bike or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thank you. But a huge thanks to our very special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Si King.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure.
The book is out, as we said. The Hairy Diet, a Simple Healthy Food, is out now from all good bookshops and all good online places. Don't forget, as always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share the podcast on all your socials. Si, once again, please send our love to Dave, and we look forward to seeing you back where you both belong together on our screens very soon.
Thank you. Thank you both.
So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da.